As you know, for some time, Patricia and I were in the financial services business. Part of what we did was conduct financial seminars. In those seminars, we covered just about every aspect of personal money management. We covered things like budgeting, saving money, buying a house, taxes, insurance, and investments. Most of the people that we talked to on a personal level or in a seminar were eager to hear about investing. But every once in a while, we met somebody who was highly skeptical. They would say things to me like this: "But the stock market goes down. What if it crashes? You would lose everything." They were not about to invest in the stock market. Now, it's true. The stock market goes up and the stock market goes down. And in that sense, it is uncertain. There is an uncertainty. But for that matter, there's an uncertainty in just about every area of life. But let me address investing for just a second. In light of the uncertainty of the future, should you invest or not invest? Now, you wouldn't expect that to be the introduction for a message from the Bible, but it is. As a matter of fact, no less than Solomon, who was reported to be the wisest man on the earth, wrote a book, and in it, he discusses investing. When I taught that seminar, I did not know this. I didn't know it until recently, when for the first time I started studying the book of Ecclesiastes. But lo and behold, Solomon says something about investing, something we all need to know. Turn with me, if you will, to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. I'm going to begin reading with the first verse. Solomon says, "Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to seven, and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall be. He who observes the wind will not sow. And he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. In the morning you sow your seed, and in the evening, do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good." In this section of the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon is discussing wisdom. If you will recall, in the first half of the book, he discussed the fact that life is futile, and he discusses various aspects of life that are futile. But when he gets to the end of chapter 6 and begins in chapter 7, he starts talking about wisdom. So it is important that you keep in mind when you come to this paragraph that he's talking about wisdom. Technically, the word wisdom isn't here, but in the context of this passage, that is clearly, unmistakably what he's talking about. Now, furthermore, he's talking about the future. I'll say more about that in a bit. And he's talking about the fact that the future is uncertain. That's the backdrop behind this passage. That's really a major point in this passage. What he does is he talks about two different things. In light of the fact that the future is uncertain, he has two subjects he wants to talk about. One is, of all things, investing. And the second is just ordinary everyday work. So I'm going to start with talking about investing. Look at verse 1. Cast your bread upon the waters. What in the world does that mean? What does it mean to cast your bread upon the waters? Well, actually, that's sort of like a proverb or maybe a figure of speech. It is what the idea behind this phrase is, you're going to grow crops and you should cast them overseas. You should ship your commodities. That's basically the idea of this first phrase of the first verse. As a matter of fact, I'm using the New King James translation. If you use some other translation, it may say something like that. I am not particularly a fan of the NIV for the simple reason it's not a literal translation. It's an interpretation in a lot of places. And that, I think, when you're reading the Bible, you need a more of an accurate translation than an interpretation. Interpretation is fine. I do it every week. But for when you're going to read your Bible, you need a good translation. And for that reason, I think the New King James is one of the best on the market at the moment. And I'm not a fan of the NIV because they tend not to translate what's really there and have us grapple with what it means, but they're going to interpret it for us. And the problem with that is their interpretation is not always correct. However, on this verse, they got it right. So I'm going to quote the NIV. You've never heard me do that before, but I'm going to quote the NIV. It says, ship grains across the sea. And that's basically the interpretation of this verse. Or in short, invest. That is, make money and invest. Ship your grains across the sea to sell them. You're going to make money and you're going to invest in this business that you have of growing, raising, and selling crops. So, point one, invest. Invest. Now, I want to talk about that for a second. In 1926, a man wrote a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. How many of you have ever heard of that book? Ah, one, two, my wife. All right, let me tell you about that book. It's an imaginary story. And Babylon is chosen because it was the richest city at the time in this plot. It begins with two men, ordinary laborers, and one comes to see the other and wants to borrow money. And his friend says, I can't loan you money, I'm broke. And they get to talking about this and they say, you know, we have a friend. We all grew up together. And he is now the richest man in Babylon, which is the richest city in the world. How did he do it and we didn't? And they look at each other and say, let's go ask him. So these two guys go see their friend. And here's what he tells them. I'm quoting from the book. I found the road to wealth when I decided that a part of all that I earn was mine to keep. Now, that's just a cute way of saying save money. Save some. Then he said that he learned all of this from another man who was wealthy. And this wealthy man told him, if you become wealthy, you must save more than you earn. Its children must earn. And that's another fancy way of saying invest. Now, the reason I bring this book up is I think you ought to read this book. I got on the internet this morning and looked it up. You can buy it new on the internet for less than $5. Now, usually when they say less than, it means $4.99. I mean less than. I found it for $4. I found 111 copies for $4.37. That's less than. Now, of course, you got to pay shipping and handling, which is almost as much as the book. But you need to buy this book. You need to buy this book. And if you think you're too old, then buy a copy and give it to your children. And if you're that old, buy a copy and give it to your grandchildren. They do not teach how to manage money in high school. or in college. You could be a college graduate and never had a good course in managing money. That is managing money 101. So, skip lunch and buy that book. You got it? Remember the name of it? Oh, you do. I'm impressed. All right. The Richest Man in Babylon. I will ask you next Sunday how you're doing. Now, the point is, you need to invest. The other thing I discovered about this verse is how often preachers talk about investing spiritually. And a lot of preachers have come to this verse and applied it. It's not the basic meaning, but the application of the principle is that you invest spiritually by spreading the gospel, sending the gospel across the sea, as they would say. And in that regard, I came across a story of somebody who took this verse literally, in that sense. There was a man who was, many years ago, who was a textile worker. And he crossed a river in his hometown, and he came up with an idea. He went and collected discarded bottles. He put a track inside explaining how to get to heaven, sealed the bottle, and threw it in the river. Over the next 23 years, he sent out 27,800 bottles. He received 5,640 replies from 38 states, 9 foreign countries. In one case, it took 13 and a half years for the bottle to reach Greece. In another case, the bottle floated a little inland because of a flood. Somebody got it, and as a result of all of that, they not only were converted, but they established a church. Incredible. So, go. Invest financially and spiritually. Just cast your bread upon the waters. Notice what else verse 1 says. For you will find it after many days. Now, having been a stockbroker, that really intrigues me. Because people who do get involved in investing want to make $1 million in the next week. And matter of fact, in one seminar I attended as a financial planner, the speaker said, your job is to manage expectations. That people think that the minute they get in the stock market, they're going to make a lot of money. And so what you've got to do is instruct them that it's going to take many days. I had no idea that was in the Bible. Isn't that incredible? If you're going to invest, it's going to take many days if you do it right. And I have more to say about that in a minute. But if you do it right, it's not that risky, and it's going to take many days. I would interpret that or apply that to say, in terms of financially investing today, it's going to take many years, which means the quicker you get started, the better, but you're never too old to start. All right. How about spiritually? Sometimes it takes many years spiritually. As a matter of fact, one of the most famous missionaries is Adoniram Judson, who went to Burma. He labored 7 years before he had his first convert. When missionaries first went to New Zealand, it took 9 years before the first person came to Christ, and an additional 7 years before an indigenous church was founded. When missionaries went to East Africa, it took 10 years. In West Africa, it took 14 before they saw somebody come to Christ. So it may take many years, both financially and spiritually. Now, we're still talking about investing, but there's something else you need to know. It blows my mind that this is in the Bible. Look at verse 2. Give a serving to 7, and also to 8, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. Now, a couple of these words need to be explained. In the first place, give a serving. The Hebrew word means portion. So divide this up and put it in 7 different places is the idea. And the reason is because you don't know what evil will be on the earth. And the Hebrew word translated evil means distress, calamity. Some translations translate it misfortune, which isn't bad. All right, so there are uncertainties in the future. So what? Here's what. Put it in 7 different places. If that won't do, put it in 8. In other words, in current financial terms, not only should you invest, you should diversify. Don't put all of your eggs in one basket. Put them in 7 different baskets. Now, how would you like for me to tell you how to do that financially so you can lower the risk and increase the return? You interested? You ready? I'm retired. When I was in the business, this was my specialty. You ready? Mutual funds. If you collect enough money to buy a stock, and you usually buy it 100 shares at a time, a lot of 100 shares, then all your eggs in one basket. But if you took the same amount of money and put it in a mutual fund, then the mutual fund collects money from a whole bunch of people, and they invest in hundreds of companies. So if one of them fails, you're not hurt. Then, if you really collect a lot of money, don't just put it in one mutual fund, put it in several different mutual funds. So you got your money scattered all over the world. So you can buy a mutual fund that just invests in companies in America. You can invest in companies that are just overseas. They're called international funds. You can invest in companies that do both. They're called global funds. And on and on and on and on. There are 25 at least of those kind of funds. And so just throw it all around. There is safety in diversity. Or spiritually. How about doing it spiritually? Pray. That's one basket. Get somebody else to pray. That's diversity. Go talk to the person. Basket number 4. How about inviting them to church? That's basket number 4. But there's just all kinds of things you can do. Diversify is the idea. So one of the rules of investing is diversification. Diversify. Now, back from my seminar days, let me tell you what I used to teach when I taught that you should do this financially. You know where this idea started? From what I've been told, it started with my ancient ancestors, the Greeks, who lived on islands, and they raised crops, and they put all those crops on one ship to send them to the mainland. The ship sank, and they lost everything. So they learned, hey, if that's the case, don't put all the crops on one ship, put all the crops on 5 ships. Solomon would say 7's a good number. Maybe 8 wouldn't hurt. So if you send out 7 or 8 ships, one of them sinks, you didn't lose the whole thing. So here's the point. Invest. Diversify. Because you don't know the future. That's wisdom. Matter of fact, he says that at the end of verse 2. For you do not know what misfortune is going to come on the earth. So as I mentioned at the beginning, I have people tell me, oh, I'm not going to invest in stocks. I mean, they go up and down. There could be a crash. You could lose everything. In other words, the future is uncertain. That is correct. The future is uncertain. And if you're that afraid, I recommend you don't get out of bed in the morning. Which is also risky, by the way. Stay in bed too long, and that's not healthy. So even in light of the uncertainty of the future, verse 2, invest, verse 1, and diversify, verse 2. Got it? So he's looking the future square in the eye and saying, invest anyway. Now let me say one more thing about the stock market, and I'll get off that subject, all right? If you're young enough, what's young enough? Under 50? All those over 50 started objecting to my definition of young. My point is this. If you've still got 20 years to live or before you retire, say, then go put some money in the stock market or diversify. When you accumulate enough, buy some real estate. You can do that cheaply, by the way, with a mutual fund called a REIT. Diversify, but you got time. Studies have been done, and they go back to 1926. That is, they go back far enough to include the Great Depression. And the studies come up with the same thing all the time. That is, if you had invested in the stock market, the average return is about 10%. And that's true. I sat down and when I was in the business and did some personal study. I had access to a lot of computer programs and did some study, and I was surprised. Some funds went up higher than others, and others went down, but after 10 years, they all averaged out to about 10%. I was very surprised. Now, the older you get, the more conservative you need to be. That's standard practice in the financial industry. And they usually say put that in bonds, which if you do that today, you're earning basically nothing. However, there are ways to put money aside so it's safe. So the older you get, meaning the less time you have, the more conservative you ought to be. But if you've got some years ahead of you, all right, the future's uncertain. Invest anyway. That is wisdom. And God thought it was important enough to put it in the Bible. How's that? And when I taught the seminar, which we taught it elsewhere, but we taught it in a lot of churches, I wish I had known this verse. I just said, I got Bible on this. That's what that passage is saying. I was shocked. I didn't know it until I got to Ecclesiastes. There's a second thing he says in this passage, and that is, you just need to do this, period. That you can look in the future, and you can be so afraid that you do nothing. It's the deer in the headlights syndrome. And he says, that's not wisdom. So you not only need to diversify your investments, you need to diligently be involved in life. Don't let the future scare you. Look at verse 3. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. If a tree falls to the south or to the north, in its place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Now here's what he's saying. All right, now these are agricultural people. This is an agricultural context. And they look outside and they say, hey, they're clouds. Oh, wow, they're clouds. You know, they can dump a lot of water on the ground. I mean, they can cause a flood. So they look at the clouds and say, wow, we can't sow. Or the wind's blowing. And they say, you know what? The wind can blow over a tree. I mean, some of the winds are very, very strong and they can blow over a tree. So, well, we can't reap while the wind's blowing. In other words, he's addressing the same basic issue. And he's saying, if you look at the clouds that's full of rain and the wind that's in great gust, then you will have a tendency to not sow and not reap. In other words, not work. If you're that afraid, it'll stop you from doing what you should do. So the point is, work. Be involved. Go for it. In other words, to say the same thing another way, don't wait. Don't wait to invest. And that's what I think these people were trying to say to me. They're saying, but the economic situation is bad. I was in the business for 10 years. There was never a time during those 10 years when I didn't meet somebody who thought the crash was going to happen tomorrow. So don't wait. You're looking at the clouds full of rain. You're looking at how fast and how furious the wind's blowing. Don't let that stop you. Or, I think this happens all the time. There are believers who say, you know, there's no sense witnessing to him. He's got an attitude. He wouldn't accept the Lord anyway. Oh, I see you've thought that way. You're confessing by the smile on your face. No sense witnessing to them. I mean, I looked at that cloud and it's full of water. Or I looked at that guy and he's full of wind, hot air. No sense talking to him. Solomon says, don't wait. And here's why. Look at verse 5. You do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child. So you do not know the works of God who makes everything. He's saying, look, you don't know the future. Now, the whole point of verses 3 and 4 is somebody looked at the cloud and they, in their great wisdom, said, well, it's full of water and it's going to rain, therefore I won't sow. Or they saw the wind knocking over trees and they say, well, that's it. I'm not farming this year. And Solomon says, you don't know. You don't know. You don't know that it's going to rain, and you don't know how long the wind's going to blow. You don't know what God's going to do. So don't just do nothing because you don't know what's going to happen. Now, we're a little more sophisticated. Notice I said a little more sophisticated about the weather. Yeah, right. I grew up in Florida, so they said the hurricane's coming, and it's headed directly for Miami, and it's going to go straight up Florida. It's going to destroy everything in its path. That was Monday. About Wednesday, they said, it's getting closer, and now we think it's going to scrape the east coast of Florida, but it's going to hit South Carolina. And about Friday, they say, it's closer. And now we calculate that it's going to go up the east coast of Florida and bypass South Carolina, and it's going to hit Virginia. You ever heard a weather forecast like that? You ever heard one like that recently? The worst storm in the history of mankind is about to hit New York. Sort of skirted New York and dumped it all on Boston. You don't know. You just don't know. You ever heard of a tornado chaser? There are people in Texas and Oklahoma who chase tornadoes. One of the best at it in the last couple of years was killed because the tornado took a sudden turn nobody expected. You just don't know. That's why weather forecasts say there's a 90% chance it's going to rain. Smart weatherman. Very smart weatherman. He doesn't know. He's got more insight and information than they did when Solomon wrote this. But even then, they don't know. Why? Because God's in control of all this in the final analysis, and you don't know what he's going to do. So don't sit on your hands. Do something. And a key part of this passage is verse 5. You do not know. You don't know about the wind? Look at this. Or how bones grow in the womb of a woman with child. Now, we know a lot now that Solomon didn't know, but we still don't know the answer to this. Tell me how bones grow in a fetus. Well, I can tell you they do. And I can tell you that we now have tested. We can tell you whether it's male or female, but we don't know how those bones grow. And Solomon is saying, look, you're not God. You don't know. So don't just sit on your hands and do nothing. And he says that, verse 5. So you do not know the works of God who makes everything. You don't know. So what do? You work. That's what you do. And you diverse. You be diversified. And you just keep at it. That's what he's saying. How many of you have ever heard the expression, life is uncertain, eat dessert first? How many of you ever practiced the principle? Guess where that, this is not the best illustration of this, but I couldn't pass it up. A book was written by that title. And it came about because a lady decided, she loved desserts, but she decided that she would put off eating the dessert until later that evening. And the reason she wrote the book, or somebody wrote the book about her, I don't know which. And the reason that principle came about is because that lady who decided that was on the Titanic. So when you pass the dessert table, remember the Titanic. Now, that's bad. I'm going to regret that I said that. But the point is, you don't know. You don't know. You may kill over a heart attack before you get to eat the rest of that fattening food. So eat the dessert first. All right. Have I made the point? You got it? I think the issue in this passage is the fact that we don't know the future. That's the issue. So some people see that, and because they see uncertainty or disaster, they freeze. And Solomon is saying, wisdom says, it's true. You don't know the uncertain future. But that uncertainty should not prevent you from acting for the simple reason you don't know what God's going to do. So, invest. Spread the word. Or what other projects do you have that you've put on the shelf? Are you waiting for conditions to get better? Now, what I did not do in going through this passage is highlight all the times he said, we do not know. So I want to conclude by just emphasizing, we don't know the future. You don't know. So if I were going to do that, I would point out that Solomon says in this passage, we do not know what misfortune will be in the future. That's verse 2. We do not know the way of the wind. That's verse 5. We do not know how bones grow in a fetus. That's verse 5. We do not know what God will do. That's verse 5. We do not know which of several ways will work. Oh, that one's particularly interesting. You don't know which way will work, so diversify. Look at verse 6. In the morning you sow your seed, in the evening you hold it. You do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which way will prosper, or whether both alike will be good. That's the reason you diversify, because you don't know. It may be what you do with the right hand, it may be do what you do with the left, and maybe both. So diversify. 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 But the point is, work. So, some look in the future, they see uncertainty, and they do nothing. Solomon says, you look in the future, it's true. It's uncertain. You don't know. So be wise. Don't do anything. Just be wise. Which means things like diversify.
But whatever you do, don't sit down and do nothing. Keep moving. Got a project that you've been sitting on because you don't know the future? Keep moving. Keep moving. Don't stop. Keep moving. On June the 6th, 1944, the Allied forces landed on Normandy. We call that D-Day. The shores were well fortified with German guns. As the Allied troops landed, many of them crouched behind, and I didn't know this until I read it recently, there were great wood and iron mines shaped like crosses protruding out of the water. So they stopped. They didn't advance. They stood behind those crosses. And what I read said, those who hunkered down in fear inevitably died. And those who kept moving, even into the cascade of gunfire, had a greater chance of surviving. Don't just sit down and do nothing. Keep moving. Got it? Father, thank you for giving us wisdom. Wisdom like what you've recorded in the book of Ecclesiastes. Give us the grace to act on your wisdom and wise principles and not the way we feel. In Jesus' name.